You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with Something Rather Than Nothing, and really blessed to have the opportunity to talk to Taylor Dean, who's an artist that I just recently encountered and find her work to be amazing. She also just graduated, but I'm not going to talk too long. Taylor Dean, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to meet you.
And big day just recently in your art studies.
Yes, I just graduated with my MFA from Pratt Institute yesterday.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a special time. I can't imagine how much effort and time and mental energy you put into that.
Absolutely. That was a lot.
All right, Taylor, to the beginning. Were you an artist when you were born?
I've been thinking a lot about this question. I do think that I have always had a propensity for the creative. I can remember being a kid and being so enwrapped in my own created world and loving my imagination. And I was talking to my younger cousin the other day, and he was like, "I'm bored." And I was like, you know, I never really got bored as a kid because I was always so enwrapped in my imagination, and I never really felt like there was a moment that was dull because of that. And I think that is what made it easier to become an artist. Obviously, I think our environments also help, and that if people encourage you to become an artist, or at least are open to the idea, that it's easier. But I think I always needed that outlet. And so I got really into cartooning when I was a teenager. And I tried to be a musician for a while, and that did not work for me. I wasn't very good at it. But art stuck. And I think that I was very much naturally apt to working with my hands and drawing rather than other types of creative activities, which I find kind of interesting.
Yeah. And just to give listeners a sense of things, maybe we can just drop into, you know, we could just chat about a couple projects, a couple pieces that you've done. I recently encountered your work and just really drawn in, and it's evocative. I don't want to describe your art. I want you to kind of tell us like what you're up to.
Yeah. So when I was in Pratt and things were online for a period of time, I was taking a bookmaking class. And I'm kind of bad at following the rules. And I was just kind of like seeing how far I could push the boundaries of what a book is. And for my final project, I started making paper sculptures that were like folded and still using kind of the framework of a book. But kind of trying to break the rules as much as I could with it. And so I ended up making this kind of paper lantern like thing, or maybe it looked like a kite. I don't know. I've had it described both ways, but I had these watercolor paintings on every side of this, this paper sculpture that I made. And it was made of three boxes connected to each other, kind of like the tiers of a cake almost. And not each watercolor painting was paintings of landscapes I've seen in the last year in Oregon. I've been conducting anthropological studies on indigenous ancient art in the Pacific Northwest. And a lot of the paintings came from these archaeological sites that I had seen, the beautiful views of these places where people had lived for thousands of years before I had been there. And the spiritual power at these sites is very intense. At a lot of these sites, I didn't feel comfortable using the imagery because it didn't feel like it was necessarily for me. But I felt that the landscape also held the same power or a similar power that these ancient art pieces held. I really wanted the viewer to feel the sublime that I felt in that moment while also kind of getting into this weird paper sculpture moment. And that's kind of what drove the rest of my MFA thesis were these paper sculptures. I made two other paper sculptures for my thesis. One was a pretty large paper star. And then the other one was like a 9-foot tall paper hexagon sculpture that I hung from these series of ropes for my thesis that I had made myself. And yeah, I think that paper sculptures are really kind of a new direction for me that I'm really excited about. And I love how it works really well with kind of the graphic design, the Coast Salish design that I've been working in. So I like silkscreen printing a lot. And there was a silkscreen lab at my college and I was in there all the time. And so I would do digital drawings on my computer using the elements of Coast Salish design. And then I would go onto the silkscreen and just silkscreen that out onto the paper and then glue it all together. So yeah, that's kind of my most recent body of work right now.
Yeah, thank you. I've had the opportunity to learn more about Salish art and come in contact with artists. And it's been a real blessing for me to be able to do that. And to see that world and connect to it. And it just seems, you know, here's the thing. It seems so readily available to me, like on Instagram, and I get to enjoy it and all this type of things. And I kind of like look behind me and be like, do you understand this like incredible art that's being produced? And I've had guests from all around in some in Oregon, but just I've appreciated the ability to connect with Washington State tribes and such. Taylor, what or who made you who you are?
I think my life would not be the same if it wasn't for being a member of the Puyallup tribe. That has made my life so different than what it would have been like, because it's given me a community that I can connect with in a way that I feel a lot of people don't have. And I also have been given a lot of opportunities that I think everyone should have in this country, but they don't. Because of the way that our system is set up. And, you know, I know that I couldn't have gone to college if it wasn't for the opportunities given to me by them. And I really am so thankful for that. It would be very difficult to be the artist that I am today without the training that I've had in the institution. I think that it's really helped me hone my skills and be able to focus on that in a way that I think might have been more difficult if I hadn't have had those opportunities. Also just the philosophy of the tribe of, you know, you be generous, be giving. I think that's really at the core of my own personal philosophies, is that, you know, you should always give more than you take. And that you should always be generous with everybody around you. And I think that that's not really a lesson that's generally taught in the broader society. And I really try to bring it into my own life however I can.
Yeah, and it's the kind of reciprocity and investment and support. Gosh, artists are going to be so sensitive to that, right? Because, I mean,
I think there's a huge part of reciprocity in art that I see in my own life, artists giving to each other, artists teaching each other. And I think that specifically printmaking is really apt for that, because you can make so many and then printmakers will trade art with each other all the time. And so that's something that I've kind of become keen to as I've gotten older.
Hey, Taylor, I get it.
Let me know.
All right, we're good. Yeah. Okay, cool. That and again, I appreciate your comments around the support. I see artists You know, the question comes up a lot of time when, like, I ask, were you an artist when you were born? And the answer that artists give a lot of time can, like, be really indicative of, like, how you develop, right? Like, I was born into a family of artists, but they all like Impressionism or, you know.
Yeah, that wasn't me.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
My parents are not artists. They're very much so working class folks who, you know, don't really know much about art, but my mom knows a little bit, and, you know, was always trying to help me learn about things I was interested in, even though, you know, she didn't know how to make art herself. But going to graduate school, I did realize, like, when I would talk to people, they'd be like, oh yeah, well, my mom's an artist or like whatever. And I'd be like, wow, like that, you're so lucky. Like I can't imagine what that must have been like. It must have really helped you. My parents were always very into sports, and I really appreciate them trying to find something I could be interested in. But I think they wanted me to like sports more than they wanted me to like art sometimes. So it was definitely what I focused on more as a kid. I was a volleyball player instead of, you know, spending all my time making art. But I still learned a lot from volleyball, like how to like work in a team, which is something I do all the time now. A lot of my work ends up being collaborative, especially as a printmaker. You're always working with other people to try to make the print happen. And you're never isolated in a print lab. You're always around somebody else. And a lot of my work has become collaborative because I'm interested in the social world. I'm interested in justice. And because of that, I'm interested in politics, frankly. So I think that the skills I learned as a kid still transfer over into being an artist today.
Yeah, yeah. I picked up on a particular point you were saying about like when you went to school and experience I had as well, where you're talking to people and like, oh, my dad did this and my mom did this, particularly in the art world. And it cuts both ways, you know? I mean, I found that like when I talk to people about that, they can be so weighed down by their history. Like, they're like, fuck art. Like, I don't want to do anything related to art. And they might be an artist, or it can be, for me, I felt not coming from that background, I felt that I've had freedom, which is scary a lot of the times, like, what do I even do? But I feel it cuts both ways. And I've actually liked the liberation and freedom of not coming from that.
Yeah, I've known so many people who feel like they're in the shadow of their parents. And I can't imagine how difficult that must be, to feel like I have to measure up to them. I don't feel that way about my parents. We're doing our own things.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad does a construction, so we're kind of in like, he does a lot of like commission work and things that he would put as artistic. So we have like that in common, but it's not the same at all.
Taylor, we're talking about art, throwing the term around. I wanted to ask you, what is art?
I think it's a very complicated question, because you could say art is any sensory experience, but then that qualifies a lot of things that might not be art to be art. Especially since I've gotten into art that's more intangible and more of just an experience or an interaction, I'm like, well, what is art? It's so hard to define, because I think we've moved beyond art just being an object and being in the realm of objects. So, for example, in the 90s, when artists started making relational art, art became an interaction between individuals or people who wanted to experience something in an aesthetic realm, but that wasn't just objects, that was something more social. And so I think that we've kind of moved into this realm where most things can be art if they have any kind of aesthetic experience, even if it's in a very abstract way. So yeah, I guess that's my answer. I think that we've like really moved into a weird place with art since we've started making social interactions art. And I think it's really hard to define art once you can kind of say everything in the everyday can potentially be art. It becomes how we perceive it and how we categorize it.
Yeah. I got another question. And it has to do about you as an artist in the world is, what do you think your art is, and what do you think others think your art is?
Good question. I think my art is still very based in the object, for the most part. I think my art is always has political undertones, even when it is something in the more abstract. Because when I make art about Coast Salish design, I'm making art about a history that is very political inherently, and I'm making art about spirituality in a way that is that has these messages that are like, I'm trying to convey something about my belief system, not just in the spiritual realm, but about morality and ethics. So when I make an art piece about an oral story about the salmon, what I'm really talking about is the relationship that human beings have to the natural world. I'm not just talking about, oh, this story, because these stories were made for us to learn and to teach. And I think that that's maybe what my art is about, is trying to convey a message through the various types of mediums that I'm using, because I think that, you know, it's easy to just tell people something, like, you should believe this. But to tell a story that has a message, or to make artwork that is about a story, I think you can kind of subliminate those like authoritarian ways of telling people how to believe. How do other people see my art? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to be in the shoes of another. I think that it's kind of hard for a non-Indigenous person to exactly understand what I'm talking about, or even maybe a non-Coast Salish. But I think that you can get hints, because you do see things in the natural world coming up. And sometimes I am very blunt about what I'm trying to say. And so if you kind of look at my body of work together, you can piece everything into a wider narrative about, okay, here we're talking about environmentalism. Quite often we're talking about revitalization of Indigenous culture. We're talking about mixed race issues. We're talking about whiteness. We're talking about colonialism. So I think that I really hope that my viewer does, even if they don't know all of the specifics of what I'm trying to say. You know, they might not know the story that I'm alluding to in this piece, but they will see there's a connection between my identities, my belief systems, and the imagery that I'm using.
Yeah. Can you talk about your, you know, I like to, I like to, when it's appropriate and it's proper, you know, talk about and have a question around, you know, does art have a duty to disrupt, right? The politics of it, the object itself, your history. I know artists can be frustrated by, like, where they come from and trying to create something like it's political because of where it comes from, or who I am, or what I said somewhere.
Right.
Do you find that a difficult or problematic dynamic of, like, getting, here's what I want to say. If you're trying to have art and make a political statement, not a statement, have it be political, do you get frustrated with how you do that, or how other people are trying to see it? How do you deal with the political dynamic of it?
Right. I see what you're saying. And I know a lot of people experience feeling frustrated about, like, oh, just because I make art about my identity, that's political to you. And yeah, I hear that. And I think that that's a really valid feeling. I feel complicated about it. I think I am very excited about the political world. I see the implications it has on the social. And I think that there's something that really drives me there. But a lot of people are like, you know, I don't want my work to be perceived that way. And I understand that feeling because it feels like your identity maybe is being put into a box. And I don't want to feel that way either. But at the same time, I feel very engaged with the political world. And I also believe that the personal just ends up being political for almost everybody, you know? You might just be making work about being a housewife, but that is inherently political. Because when we talk about the domestic, we're talking about a history of gender interactions. And that is inherently a part of our political world. And I feel the frustration with it, and maybe someday that won't be the case. But I feel personally very excited about the opportunity to talk about politics in my work. And I don't know, I respect how other people feel though, because I do think it is frustrating. And I do get kind of frustrated with the idea that there can't just be an aesthetic quality for Indigenous artists. And I would really hope that my work wouldn't perpetuate this idea that, you know, just because you're making art about your identity, that it therefore it's political, because, you know, there are people who are whatever identity and they just want to make abstract paintings because they love abstract paintings. And that's amazing. I want them to be able to not have to talk about their race, their gender, their whatever in a discussion about their art, because that's not what it's about. They just want to make a beautiful painting. And I think that that is inherently valid as well as any political artwork. But there's just something about me that I have like a drive for politics. I love engaging in local politics, and I want to be a part of that so badly. There's something about it that I'm just like drawn to in a way that I can't describe, because I feel like there's an opportunity there to make a difference in the world. And I really want to be a part of that opportunity because I think I'm apt for it.
Yeah, I appreciate your thoughts. I know it's a thing to grapple when I don't, and tied to identity as well. There was something that you had said, earlier about like categories of like the work you were doing, what is a book, right? And I find that philosophers and people can find like a lot of fertile stuff in like, what is it? Like, is it this or is it that? And I find that a lot with like identity, like in America, it's like, mm-hmm. Are you this or are you that? And it's like, totally. No,
yeah,
neither. And
right.
I think I'm encouraged recently how there's just greater openness and expression and comfort in moving out of that, politically, because, gosh, our system seems dominated by dualities. And I am interested in the boundaries. I'm interested in the borders.
Same.
Thank you.
I mean, that's my life, you know.
Yeah.
I obviously am extremely white passing, and I've gone through the world assumed a white person most of the time, unless I tell you otherwise. So that puts me in a very interesting, different position than a lot of other people. And it's like, I can't divorce my whiteness from who I am, and I can't divorce my nativeness from who I am. And I think that makes people really uncomfortable. And I know I've made a lot of people really uncomfortable in my lifetime. And part of me feels really bad. And then part of me is like, no, screw you. Like this is a conversation that we need to have, because we're stuck in these like binaries, like you said, of like, you are this, you are that, with everything about human beings. You know, you can't be two things at once when the world is so complicated. It's really hard to have any kind of black and white in a world that's like so gray, I think.
Yeah. I want to ask now about like, you had graduated, and I heard a lot of what you had to say, which is something that I'm very interested in, is like art community and creation and support. Do you feel confident in like that and in that support over time in building the relationships amongst artists in a community? Like, it seems like you've really felt that, and there's been a lot of, I know for myself, when I'm interacting, the creativity of them runs through me. It's, I'm not trying to take theirs, but that seems to be a very healthy environment at the Expect, being around that community.
Yeah. Like I said, I come from a printmaker tradition, and that is just inherently people who need community to make their work and are thrust into it. And maybe I'm a little bit more of an introverted individual, but I also really enjoy the community aspects of the work that I've made. And I recently ended up doing a project where I collaborated with a nonprofit group called Recess. And the community that they have is really incredible. They help expunge youth's records from the prison system, and they give them a job and they give them training in the arts. And so it's this really amazing organization that's working through arts and education to really make a difference in the world. And through that community, I've really been excited to work with art and politics. And I think that that is what art can do, is we can build this ideal world. You know, you want to see the end of the carceral state? Well, here's an example of how we can do this through art. Because they're literally helping people restructure their lives in a way that we can stop the cycle of abuse. And, you know, it's empowering too, because, you know, they're not just like telling you how to be. It's like a very like collaborative environment where people have authority over their own lives in a way that I think that the prison system never gives you. And I think that that is really motivating for people to take better control of their lives. And so, yeah, I'm like really into this group because I feel this like sense of community and this like amazing opportunity that we could translate into the rest of the world of how art can become a vehicle for change in your individual lives and in a bigger structure. And they also have a print lab, and they use printmaking often. And I think that that's very indicative of how printmaking is this like community space that is very healing. That is very positive for artists, because when I hear other people talk about my work or talk about their work, ideas go off in my head too. And I think that when we're all sharing our ideas rather than like, you know, in our isolated spaces, I think that all of our work gets better. And so through Pratt and through this organization, Recess, I think I'm really gained a lot in friendships and in professional relationships that I hope to take forward to the rest of my life and continue to work with people in those organizations for as long as possible.
Yeah. Thank you. I in your mention of the prison system, of course, its connection to capitalism. I thought of a book, The Carceral Capitalism. I believe it's by Jackie Wang. And I think on the back of it or somewhere, this is not going to be an exact quote, but it's a beautiful, beautiful, like, mind-blowing thing. What do we make of the beautiful vine along the trellis of the prison walls?
Wow.
You know, it's like, what do we do with that? It's beautiful. It's in the house of pain, right? So, I love that. I love that analogy and her analysis. Thank you for your comments. All right, Taylor. Why is there something rather than nothing?
Yes, this question. thank you. This is a really interesting question. I've been thinking, what is something? Okay, whenever you want to define something, what is nothing? I think nothing would be not having consciousness of the world around you. Like going like through the world as like a plant, maybe, or an animal in a smaller sense, who arguably have more or less consciousness. The something is our ability to experience the world, remember it, and learn from it. And I think that the reason why we have this is because human beings need other human beings. And we use our consciousness to connect with each other, to create communities, to create culture. And the culture becomes the expression of our something. And so, of course, as an artist, I'm like, the art becomes the expression of the something. Because that's how we communicate. That's how we created culture. That's how we remembered our culture, was, you know, carving on a rock wall. It's how we have become who we are, and it's how we've expressed our consciousness. And, you know, I guess there's a lot of ways you could go with that, but that's, I'm always thinking about culture and what its role is in society. And so I think that's kind of immediately where my brain goes, is something is consciousness, and consciousness happens because we needed culture.
Yeah. Thank you. I was basing this on, you just graduated yesterday. I'm smart enough to go right to the,
yeah,
she's hot off the MFA and like now I'm going to ask the question.
Yeah. Yeah. We're always like asking those types of philosophical questions in our degrees. So yeah, I was ready.
Awesome. Yeah. Taylor, I want people to connect with your art and, mm-hmm. and finding you. And can you tell us, I mean, physical places to find things, online. I want the listeners to be able to see your work. Where do they go? How do they navigate?
Okay, so the best place to find my work on the internet is my Instagram, Taylor Dean Art. And I also have a website, but I don't remember the URL. It's a Wix website.
Hey, Taylor, it will be in the show notes. You're off the hook.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll send that to you. Yeah, I recently made a new website for myself with all my MFA work on it. And in person, I kind of have a lot of stuff going on. So I have a exhibition happening in Astoria, Oregon. It's a group exhibition, and it is an all Indigenous artist exhibition curated by an Indigenous artist. And it's going to be at 1312 Commercial Street in Astoria, Oregon. I want to make sure that's the right address, which maybe we could put that in the bio as well.
That's so wonderful. I love this story and hear that's all an Indigenous show. That's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is 1312 Commercial Street, so I remember. Yeah. But yeah, I'm really excited. I don't think I've ever been to Astoria, weirdly enough, and I've, you know, lived in Portland for over 20 years. So, it'll be fun. I want to like take a road trip and kind of go up and down the coast for that show. And then I have another work in Washington. I'm going to be a part of what's called the Bellwether Festival. And I'm going to be having a large scale mural in this festival. And I believe the dates for that starts on September 10th. And it's going to be in Bellevue, Washington. And I can get the exact locations on that as well.
Yeah. And when's the Astoria one open up?
I believe June 12th. June 12th.
Oh, wow.
So that's soon.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. I'm glad to hear about that. I like a story. I grew up in Rhode Island, drawn to the oceans, right. And there's a kind of that wild, violent ocean history, and it feels different there. It feels different there. I think you'll pick up on it, but very excited to hear about that show. I know for sure I will be going to Astoria for that.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be there on the opening. I have one other work that's going to be on the East Coast for our East Coast listeners. It's going to be on Roosevelt Island near the FDR Four Freedoms statue. And it's a collaborative piece with artist Sean Leonardo, and it's going to be a sculpture. So that's my three pieces that I have on display right now.
Amazing. Well, you do have a lot. You do have a lot going on, and within
I know,
that,
I do.
Um, I'm happy to have had the time with you to be able to talk about these questions and,
absolutely,
you know, connect the listeners to what you're up to, because it's exciting. And I like a lot of what you had to say, as far as I was able to connect to, as far as, you know, the art process, which I'm still new to. So I'm a learner.
Right.
And I appreciate, you know, learning from you.
Of course.
I wanted to thank you so much for taking some time and coming onto the podcast. It's been great to meet you, and I really look forward to seeing a lot more of your artwork.
Me too, and I'm excited to continue to listen to your show. I'm really glad that you reached out to me, and this was such an amazing opportunity to just kind of think through what is really going on with me. What am I thinking about?
So, yeah, it's a cool thing to think. I know it's not a cool 2021 thing. I mean, everybody's screaming, like, nobody's thinking, but we can take some time to think together. It's totally fine.
Absolutely. I agree.
Thank you so much, Taylor. Talk to you soon.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.